You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham in for Cynthia Canty. Let's get out of the studio and go get locked up.
What are we going to do?
Road trip.
We are in Jackson right now, and we're at Michigan's very first penitentiary. We're talking with the author of the book, Jacktown, History and Hard Times of Michigan's First State Prison by Judy Gale Krasnow. Tell me about the beginnings of this prison, because it was the first and probably not the massive stone walls that we see now.
The first prison after Jackson won the battle to have Michigan's first state prison was a wooden fort. It was the Wild West. And they thought, well, forts protect people, so we'll build a fort. Unfortunately, they found out the hard way that that wasn't the case with prison, because in 1840, 10 very vicious inmates escaped to become the Jackson Robber Gang, and they had no competition, so they ruled the roost. They robbed coaches, they robbed cattle, they robbed horses, they robbed people, they killed, you name it, they did it. So Jackson and the state decided we had better build a brick and stone and mortar and iron prison, and they did.
So let's talk about Jackson and how hard it fought to get a prison because of a commodity.
Yes, the commodity was the cheap labor in the Industrial Revolution. If you had a penitentiary and you had factories, you had the cheap labor of prisoners, and your town was guaranteed to become a thriving industrial town.
Now, the prisoners were paid 33.5 cents per day, but where did most of that money go?
Most of the money went to the state. 28 cents of it, as a matter of fact. 5.5 cents went to the poor prisoner, and 28 to the state. So it was a win-win situation.
And at the time, wages were about $1.50 a day. They were actually earning 5.5 cents a day.
That's right. I mean, if you were a non-convict factory worker, depending on your skills, it was $1.50 to even $2.50 a day. But compare that to 5.5 cents. So part of the punishment, so they called it, and part of it was rehabilitation. They would come out with skills, but as my book states later on, those skills, because of the 1909 law saying you couldn't have a factory on the prison that was also in the town, in other words, prison couldn't compete with private, so they would gain skills and get out and not have the skills needed for the factories outside.
The prison cells were tiny. If you can imagine spending much of your day in a 5.5 by 4.5 foot space. People were not as tall then, but some of them were. Imagine not being able to fully stretch out as you slept. And the idea of pacing in your cell, ludicrous.
I mean, this was totally claustrophobic. There was no ventilation in this room, which was the original stone brick and mortar west wing. And that's what they had to spend their time in.
The stench of the place was unimaginable. There were no toilets. Prisoners used a chamber pot, a bucket. They called them honey buckets. They were dumped once a day. As we toured the prison, it's a little hard to imagine the row after row of small cells that were here. They've been removed. But there are some photos of the bad old days. The imposing stone walls surrounding the prison are still mostly there. The Michigan State Prison was not just a place to hold prisoners, it was a place to use the cheap labor.
You will be meeting.
There were a number of industries within the prison itself, the penitentiary itself, as well as down what is called Mechanics Street. So how many actually worked in here and how many were sent out to work under the auspices of private industry?
I would say maybe a quarter were out and three quarters were in. And the variety of factories from binder twine to the world-famous Jackson Wagon Factory that built a wagon to carry Jumbo the elephant from the Barnum and Bailey Circus, a 13,000-pound elephant. You can imagine the expertise of the wagon builders to build a wagon that could carry that load, and that was the inmates of MSP.
This penitentiary started out, as we said, a wooden fort. Because Michigan was growing so fast, the number of people in prison grew so fast, there had to be constant additions. So how fast did this place grow?
The West Wing was started after the fort disaster, and that was in 1842. It was fairly well completed by 1848, though they added two more tiers. But then, as soon as it was completed, it got overcrowded, and they added the West End Wing, where I now live. And it wasn't long until that became overcrowded. So we're talking basically over a period of 40 years till the entire thing by 1882, with the East Wing, the East End Wing, the magnificent administration building, and all the factories. So it was a gradual process, but it's a fortress. I mean, they don't build buildings like this anymore.
As the prison continued to grow and grow, just how big did it get?
By the time this closed, actually before, as I said, by 1882, it was the largest walled prison in the world. That meant acreage and numbers of prisoners. Having, by the way, been condemned in 1914, but it took all that long to build the State Prison of Southern Michigan, in the East End Wing, they had to double them up like a dormitory room, and it was supposed to be for six, and it ended up being for 12. And they still didn't have flush toilets. It was still the honey buckets, even then. But of course, it was beautiful from the outside with coiffed gardens on the front of it, and the inside was horrendous. Between the honey buckets and the stench and being bathed twice a month, put in a bucket with cold well water, not allowed to wear underwear was part of the humiliation, and their uniforms were washed supposedly twice a month. So there were, you know, diseases and stench and lack of ventilation, and perhaps the worst thing, because we people talk, was the code of silence. That became a federal law in the big houses around the nation. You could not talk unless an authority engaged you in a conversation. And as soon as that was done, you were to be silent.
So no talking between the prisoners, no talking if a prisoner needed something. They couldn't ask.
They had to, for example, in a factory, if they ran out of leather or whatever the items were, they had to raise their hand. And depending upon the foreman, there were some that were a little more lenient than others. If you said, "Sir, I'm losing time, I have a quota," and spoke out like that, you could end up with bad time and in solitary, or wearing the iron cap, this heavy, heavy, literal medieval torture. And it ruined the collarbone. You could not remove it for a minimum of 14 days. You had to eat and sleep with it on. And there were other horrendous punishments for breaking the code of silence. Your hands, your wrists were chained together, and a hook was put under the chain, and you were hoisted up with your feet 4 to 6 inches off the ground and left hanging that way for anywhere from 5 hours to 72 hours. And by the time you were taken down, your rotocuffs, your shoulders, your collarbone, you name it, you had no sensation left in your arms. So a lot of the inmates, most of whom were whipped, punished, they went out maimed. And they were supposed to live a normal life and get work and, you know, scars all over their bodies. It was horrendous. It was medieval, there is no doubt.
For most of its statehood, Michigan has not had a death penalty. Instead, those who were sentenced to life in prison for murder spent their time in solitary. That was in the basement. No light. No ventilation. At one point, state inspectors visited to see how the prisoners, including those serving a life sentence in solitary, were doing.
When the inspector found them, he was so horrified that their nails had grown like claws if they hadn't chewed them off. The hair was matted. They were crawling with bugs and, you know, vermin. And nine of them could just grunt and had to be sent to the mental institution. And six of them carried out to the infirmary in the sun, like brine shrimp from the Great Salt Lake, exposed to sunlight, died. And that was the result of something that we can say was so humane. 1846, Michigan was the first state ever to abolish capital punishment, but the punishment was then life in solitary, which is 20 of them, you know, sentenced to that. 15 years later was when the inspectors came and found them malnutrition. I mean, just... So they went to the state legislature and said, reinstate capital punishment. The legislature did not. They said, instead, you wouldn't be condemned to life in solitary, but life in prison. And the term lifer originated right here at Michigan's first state prison.
This kind of behavior, this kind of treatment went on for decades, but finally, before this prison closed in 1934, there were some changes.
There were definite changes. They began actually in 1870 with John H. Purvis. He was the first reformer, and he said you have to be firm but compassionate. And then came Warden Hatch, who started educational programs saying if a man goes out educated, he'll have a better chance not to return. But the most amazing one was 1933, the very last chaplain at MSP, Albert M. Ewart. He believed that the arts were rehabilitative, and he formed a studio. He was a jack of all arts, and he taught painting and writing and whatever art, music composition. And in my book, Harry Evans, alias in the prison, John Blood, became a poet. He had a 15-year sentence for grand larceny. He got out after seven and never returned. And I firmly believe it's because he found this marvelous form of expression within himself. And one of his very powerful poems is in my book, Jacktown.
After the prison closed, after the penitentiary closed in 1934, it was used by the military as an armory for a long time. But that's not what it is today. Tell me about what the Michigan State Prison Penitentiary is today.
It is the only old penitentiary repurposed into a residence and, to boot, an artist's residence community. And as walking through here, you can see the bars are still on the windows, but next to them hangs art, the art of the artists here at Armory Arts Village.
And you actually live here.
I live here, and I love my apartment. I chose it when the renovation was first beginning, and it was some 36 prison cells. I had no idea what my apartment would look like. And when I moved in here from Miami, Florida, thanks to WDET Detroit and its report about this that I heard in Miami, Florida, and brought me here, I came on January 5th, 2008, in the midst of a blizzard, shook and thought, oh my God, what have I done? And when I finally, shaking, got the key into the door and opened it, I was astounded at the magnificent job it was the Quinn Group, the architects, had done, still retaining the integrity of the building, the brick, the concrete, the bars on the windows, but really making unique apartments.
What's the lesson to be learned from Michigan's first state penitentiary?
The lessons to be learned, in my opinion, are that it was very medieval and punishment was considered a means of deterring others from committing crime, and the punishments were physical. I don't think we've really come all that far. Today, there aren't whippings and such, but there's more psychological damage done, and we still think that punishment will deter crime, but statistics don't prove it. My feeling is this history is utterly fascinating. It's such a part of Jackson, of Michigan, and of humanity, because it is, you know, like what was going on then. But I also think there are lessons to be learned about thinking about what are we doing today with those who are incarcerated? And how can we truly have a person come out of prison truly rehabilitated and ready to live in normal society again?
The book is Jacktown, History and Hard Times at Michigan's First State Prison by Judy Gale Krasnow.
Hey, one more thing. We've got some photos of the prison from today and from the past. You can find them online at michiganradio.org. Support for arts and culture coverage comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.